This is KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. Recent polls have indicated that Hillary Clinton may have a chance to win Arizona in November. Considering Democrats have only done that here in the presidential race once since 1952, it would be a major accomplishment. But also considering voter registration and the passion that a lot of residents apparently have for Donald Trump, it would also be a surprising outcome. In a piece he wrote for Phoenix New Times, Tom Zellner explores what Arizona has in common with Trump. Zellner, who's also the author of A Safeway in Arizona, What the Gabrielle Giffords Shooting Tells Us About the Grand Canyon State and Life in America, is with me now to talk about Trump and Arizona. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
Tom, you cover a lot of things. One part of the piece includes the list that begins with an economy built on harebrained real estate deals found a perfect champion. Why does it make sense, based on Arizona's history with real estate, that they would be attracted to someone like Trump, and especially from the East Coast point of view?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Here's someone with a flagrant sort of New York style walking into Arizona, which I argue sort of foresaw Trump. There's 30 years of a foundation for his message really to have hit home in our state, and some of that has to do indeed with an economy built on real estate deals without the preparation of a real economy.
Are you discouraged? When you wrote the piece, did you write it as a wake-up call to people? Did you write it as something that, frankly, got you down?
I didn't want to bash Donald Trump any more than has already been done. It's only to sort of point out the sociological factors which kind of paved the way for his ascendancy. I really think he found a second political home in Arizona, and legislation like SB 1070, for as many fireworks as that generated, it sort of proved the market. It established a base electorate for Donald Trump.
Hey, you use the phrase a malodorous brand of politics, a greenhouse for Donald Trump. This may be kind of a slam dunk question, Tom, but what are the clearest examples of that? You mentioned Russell Pierce, of course, Jan Brewer is mentioned. Sheriff Arpaio still running for reelection again this year.
Mm-hmm. I think we heard a little of it with the preceding guest. The credentialing of someone who comes not from a place of public service or who has had experience in government, who appeals to voters based on that very outsiderness. You know, it's as if you're asking an outsider to come in and do your heart surgery. These things do require experience in coalition building and not necessarily a scorched earth kind of philosophy.
And Doug Ducey has some similarities certainly to Donald Trump, but he doesn't have some partly the personality that I think you cite a little bit about Trump in the piece. Governor Fife Symington, another businessman turned politician. And I don't want to say that he didn't say some bold things or try what he thought were bold ideas, but neither one is a chest beater. So I guess what in common do you see there?
Yeah, this is certainly not a perfect analogy, and I'm hoping that listeners might grab New Times before it goes off the rack on Thursday and make up their own minds as to whether there's validity to this. There's plenty of holes in it, but nonetheless, you can sort of see the path being blazed by Arizona politicians going back to Evan Meekum, the quintessence of an unprepared outsider willing to say outrageous things, to slam government, and to coast into the office on a plurality and then wreak all kinds of havoc.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix talking with author Tom Zellner. He's a fifth-generation Arizonan. We're talking about his New Times piece called Proto-Trump, How Arizona Laid the Foundation for Donald Trump's America. Tom, when you hear about some of the things that went on, whether it's the Trump rally in Fountain Hills or his recent rally related to immigration policy right after he visited Mexico, does it concern you that you feel like Arizona has been so welcoming to Trump?
Yes. I mean, the nation has as well, certain pockets of the electorate all over the place. But Arizona's given him a particularly vociferous welcome. And it's my argument that this didn't come out of nowhere, that we've been primed to sort of accept these outrageous and extremist statements as if they were logical, as if they were centrist. A foundation has been laid.
It's interesting as well to me that there has been there have been reports, even when Rick Perry was running for president, and a lot of people didn't think he was much of a candidate, but one thing that came up is the relation between Mexican-Americans or the country of Mexico with Texas as opposed to Arizona. And some people were pointing out, where even with some of Texas's foibles, that relationship has been strong, whereas Arizona, it's very up and down. Do you see that as part of Trump's attraction?
I absolutely do. Texas certainly has a mature political culture when it comes to accepting a Latino presence that goes back for four centuries. Arizona, for whatever reason, is less comfortable with this idea, and certainly the Phoenix metro area is less comfortable than southern Arizona has been with our Mexican heritage, which, you know, Anglo governing presence really only goes back to 1847. And with so many newcomers, so many migrants internally from the United States coming to Arizona to make a new life for themselves, there's a bit of cognitive dissonance. And I think many voters find it frightening and want to reach out for some kind of solution.
Tom, the word came down a few days ago that Sarah Palin, who had a house here in the Valley, the house has now been sold. And so she, at a time when she was John McCain's running mate and afterwards she was sort of the darling in some conservative circles, also found some great popularity here in Arizona. If Donald Trump doesn't win, what do you think some of his Arizona supporters do? Do you think they decide, okay, we'll try it again another time, or do you think they get angry?
That's an excellent question. Is this the great man theory of history going on here, that the unique personality, the unique charismatic style of Donald Trump provides this kind of black swan that swims in and will never be seen again? Or does the political movement called Trumpism, does it survive its namesake? Do those supporters coalesce around a new figure who, frighteningly, could be more palatable than Trump, albeit with the same malodorous politics?
And Tom, finally, though, I wouldn't anticipate you having a crystal ball in front of you. Based on what you wrote and based on the history you talked about with Arizona and politics, does Hillary Clinton have a real chance here?
This has been dreamed about, as you noted, in Arizona for decades. Can the Democrats finally turn the state blue and revert it back to what some consider its original progressive foundations, enshrined in its own constitution and its own sort of New Deal heritage? And I'm an optimist. I do believe that there's a chance to do that, although this election season is unlike any other.
Author Tom Zellner, he's a fifth-generation Arizonan. We've been talking about his story in the latest edition of Phoenix New Times called Proto-Trump, How Arizona Laid the Foundation for Donald Trump's America. You can find it online. It'll also be on the newsstands for another day or so. Tom, thanks for the time.
My pleasure.
And still to come on Here and Now, we'll talk with commentator John Gabriel about Tom Zellner's article. Stay with us. It's KJZZ's Here and Now. Good morning. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. As a follow-up to Tom Zellner's article for Phoenix New Times, I'm now joined by John Gabriel. He's editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com, also a commentator and marketing consultant. John, welcome.
Welcome. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about the premise of Tom Zellner's article. Do you think that Donald Trump is especially attractive in general? Do you think he jives well with what Arizona voters want?
I think he really does, and there are some disagreements I have with the article, but he definitely found, as he said earlier, he found a second home here. And I think the state was primed with the SB 1070 fights and so forth, with his tough immigration message. I think Arizona was primed, especially with all the retirees here. There, if you look at the polling, there's such a strong generational preference. The older you get, the more you support Trump. I think also Arizona, I've lived here my whole life, and Arizona has a strong contrarian streak. People try to label it as somehow political, but I use my dad as a perfect example of that. He's voted for Republicans and Democrats, and when I ask why he votes for them, despite being a registered Republican, he always says, I haven't heard about them in the news. That means they aren't bugging me. They are not messing anything up. So I just want them in because I just please leave me alone. So I think that's a part of the appeal. Also, too, and going back to you mentioned Evan Meekum, a lot of it as well is you see in Arizona history, a passionate desire to tweak the elites, to tweak the Beltway, to tweak New York City and San Francisco and all those crazy liberals out there. Because if you all tell us not to do A, we're going to do A just to spite you.
It's funny, though, because Trump in many ways would fall into that category of elite, would he not? I mean, a New York, New Jersey guy who's building buildings and towers with his own name on it.
Exactly. And that's what I had assumed at the start of the GOP primary, and much to my horror, that it did not turn out that way. If anybody is elite, he is. But he does, he has always cultivated the touch of the common man, and even in New York City, he's the Queens kid who's moving to Manhattan and taking on those darn Manhattanites. And so it is odd that a multimillionaire real estate developer, as you said, with his name always in all caps on everything he touches, is the underdog.
I was also struck by this idea that, and I can't recall whether Trump has actually used this phrasing, but the whole silent majority thing, which Richard Nixon used at the time. Do you feel like there has been a silent majority that was sort of brought up when Russell Pierce put together 1070, when Governor Brewer signed it? And then do you think Trump has sort of, maybe those people have been laying low a little bit, maybe in some Republican primaries, but otherwise we don't really hear from them much. But now that Trump has sort of allowed them to reawaken.
Yeah, I think they feel safe, especially with his increasingly strident rhetoric. He calls it just being politically incorrect, but it's almost designed to tweak certain constituencies, let's say. And I think people feel emboldened. Wow, if he can say it, I can go even a little bit farther. And you see that, gosh, just turn on the internet if you dare and read some commentary there. Turn on to some of the louder voices in the media. And you see it again and again. People are getting emboldened. For the first time in my life, I'm seeing lifelong Republicans praising a KGB aide in Vladimir Putin. So
this is, I think it would be, and this has been something people have been doing for decades. What is wrong with the Republican Party in Arizona? Well, the party seems to continue to win elections, so I guess not that much. But when it comes to Trump, does that brand hurt the Arizona Republican Party at all? And have you been surprised that some of the leaders haven't tried to push themselves away from him more?
I haven't been surprised by it in that the people who are most dedicated to voting, again, Arizona skews older than the national average, especially among Republicans. And I think there is a strong affinity towards people like Joe Arpaio. Before, we talked about Evan Mecham. I think where the New Times article breaks down a bit is comparing him. Well, Trump's a businessman. Doug Ducey's a businessman. Trump is his own animal, and I always have viewed him as more of a crony capitalist than a just a hardworking entrepreneur. He's, you know, very good at mastering and manipulating the press, as we've seen repeatedly. But I think there is a lot of affinity for people who tweak the noses of the mythical party boss establishment that's secretly pulling puppet strings on us all. And I think politicians, even those who are actually elites, are very scared to annoy that constituency because they are very loud.
And I was trying to think if Arizona had any sort of larger-than-life business characters, because you mentioned Doug Ducey, yes, businessman. Fife Symington maybe for a slight time had that. Christine Jones, who we talked to earlier in the program, doesn't really have that. Evan Mecham was in a real quirky way, but he was also a car dealer. I mean, yeah. So I can't really think of anyone who fits that profile here.
Right. I think the only thing Phoenix has had in its recent history would be Jerry Colangelo. But he would dabble in politics here and there, but he never tried to force his opinion. He was more about loving the various sports that he was involved with and raising Arizona's profile. He was involved in politics and getting the Chase Field, formerly Bank One Ballpark, built. So you had that issue. But none of our business people, they seem more about the bottom line and not about flamboyant, showy personality. And maybe because we don't have the domineering media culture that you would have on the coasts.
And John, going back to Tom Zellner's article, he used the term malodorous to describe some of what has gone on in Arizona. I think a lot of people have been disturbed by some of the legislation that come out. In fact, the legislature gets blamed for most of the negative things that come about. And yet there's also that group of people who are almost too positive, shall we say. Do you think there's enough of a middle group? And I don't mean middle politically, but middle in terms of expectations here.
I think that there is. It'll be interesting to see how this election turns out, because Trump has been surprisingly close to Clinton in presidential polling for Arizona, and we'll see how it shakes out. We are several weeks out, and that's an eternity in politics, of course. But I think one thing that mellows out the voter outrage here and there in Arizona is we have so much of a transient population, and they might not vote in local races, in races for your local school board. They will turn up for the presidency. And we have so many people who come out to work here for one of the big tech corporations for a couple of years and then move on. And they kind of reduce the anger of very angry longtime Arizonans, let's say.
But how nasty do you think this November is going to be? Because you'll have Trump And, of course, Sheriff Arpaio, who we've seen a lot of ads from, maybe he feels like this, his back is against the wall. He's going to use all those millions that he has. I mean, could, because of those two being so polarized, do you think it could be even nastier than usual?
I think it will be nastier than usual. And you're seeing on the national stage, and I think we'll definitely see that in Arizona. There's so many incriminations and so many attacks on the integrity of the voting system itself, which is a pretty combustible combination, because what I'm concerned about, so many of us are like, oh my gosh, November's almost here and then it'll be over. What I'm very concerned about is if it's a very close race, that incrimination season will be open starting right after Election Day.
And John, finally, where do we go from here? Let's say Donald Trump doesn't win. He wins Arizona, but let's say he doesn't win the country. Where do some of those Trump voters in Arizona go? Do they sort of go back to hating John McCain, for example, or do they find something else to do?
I think they would like to go after John McCain, but if he is reelected, they won't have him as their next the next head they want on their mantle. Instead, I think they'll go for Jeff Flake, who has been very outspoken in his opposition to Trump. And I've already seen a lot of chatter of trying to make him public enemy number one.
John Gabriel is a commentator and marketing consultant. He's also editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com. And John, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.